Thank you. Erica? Right. Okay. So we are going to talk about how we can use spatial analytics to examine Merylobus weight that is less than 1,500 grams, be it live births or fetal deaths. In Southern Nevada, we are home to Las Vegas, have a population about 2.1 million, so Clark County is one of the most populous counties. We are mostly an urban setting. And the K-means clustering approach was recently added to the ArcGIS toolbox. So we did a PPOR analysis about 2 years ago, and some of you are probably earlier adopters of this approach. That is perinatal periods of risk. This approach allows you to partition your fetal infant deaths into four distinct risk periods where you can apply more focused efforts. So our phase one PPOR data showed an increase in excess fetal infant deaths, that is preventable fetal infant deaths, relative to the non-Hispanic white reference group. This was mostly driven by a widening disparity in the maternal health risk period between African-American and non-Hispanic white groups. So as you can see, PPOR allows you to capture and discuss community disparities and to address health equity. In our phase two PPOR data, discovered that the very low birth weight rather than infant survival was the main causal mechanism contributing to the excess maternal health deaths among our vulnerable populations. So it's imperative that we focus our efforts on factors that contribute to very low birth weight in our communities. And we decided to leverage GIS and spatial data and tools to further characterize our vulnerable populations and areas. Is it noisy? Oh, okay. Sorry, I had no idea. Okay. So these are the dynamic stages comprising PPOR. So the central tenet is actionable analysis. That is, we need to engage our partners, community partners, at every stage of the PPOR framework in order to prioritize actions and strategies to prevent fetal infant death. And with spatial control maps or neighborhood clustering, we can formalize a analytic strategy to describe and evaluate the presence of very low birth weight and assess its relationship with social demographic and the maternal variables. I'm sorry, is it still noisy? Or? Oh. Okay. I had no idea. I thought it was just me. Apparently it's not. So we used merged live births and fetal deaths of 2010 to 2013 to investigate very low birth weight. And this temporal aggregation helps ensure density of live births and fetal deaths per census tract, which is the geographic unit of analysis. And of the 470 census tracts with a minimum of 20 live births fetal deaths, which is the sample size threshold for being included in a study, the average number of live births and fetal deaths was about 220 per tract over the four-year study period. And we geocode those records and then link them to census tract by averaging the study covariates. That is very low birth weight outcomes and maternal risk factors from vital records. And we also incorporate social demographics from ACS. Gosh. Maybe I'll try it this way. Okay, so we used a technique called kriging to visualize the distribution of very low birth weight. Kriging is actually a suite of techniques that employ a basic geostatistical premise, that is, things that are closer together tend to be more alike than things that are further apart. In other words, kriging relies on spatial autocorrelation to make predictions at the unsampled locations so that you have a continuous service covering your whole study region. And if you come from an environmental science background, then you know that kriging has wide applications in environmental resource management. For example, you can use it to interpolate rain gauge, sun radiation, or you can use it to model air pollution, radioactive contamination. And if we assume that birth outcome is a spatial process affected by both social and physical environments, then we can use Kriging to model spatial dependence in your data. Okay, so the reliance on spatial dependence to make predictions is also known as Toplow's first law of geography. That is, information collected on spatial locations are autocorrelated until some distance apart. And in a nutshell, Kriging weights surrounding measurements to make predictions. And the weights, or W in this basic equation, are defined by semivariogram. And you can think of semivariogram as the inverse of covariance. So basically, you're trying to quantify the strength of your the correlation in your data as a function of distance. And if we adopt a intrinsic stationarity assumption, that is, there is a distance decay to a spatial autocorrelation, then we can estimate semivariogram model and optimize model parameters and use the under the condition of unbiasedness and minimal variance, that is, and then use the optimal model to interpolate a surface. And the surface will be very much like a heat map, except that you are mapping modeled predicted values. I know there's a lot of theory and terminology. The good news is that we are using a more automated or robust version of Kriging. It's called empirical Bayesian Kriging. This Bayesian method is different from traditional or classical Kriging in that it subsets the data and then estimate variograms within each subset and use and then simulate new data, use the estimated variogram, and then use the estimated variogram to simulate new data, and then to estimate the variogram again within each data subset. So this is typically a Markov-chain Monte Carlo simulation, so that the final variogram parameters are calculated from posterior distributions. And it does not assume first-order stationarity. That is, it allows your rates to vary, the underlying mean to be different across your study region. And it does automate the manual process of variogram fitting. It doesn't have a global form of variogram models. And for EDK, we linked the very low birth rate rates to population-weighted census tract centroids so that the sample network reflects our population density. Okay. Well, so EBK does have its limitations in that it's mostly a univariate analysis, and if you want to look at associations, then you want to use a multidimensional or multivariate technique such as k-means clustering. This is available under the grouping tool in ArcGIS 10.3. And as the name suggests, k-means clustering partition the data into k distinct clusters or groups using inputs, that is using any number of inputs you want, you know, your social demographic and maternal risk factors. And the algorithm starts with k random seeds, and then it goes through your observations to assign them to the closest cluster, and then recalculate cluster center. So this process alternates between assigning observations and recalculating clustering centers until your cluster is stabilized. That is when the assignment no longer changes. And I think I use the term cluster here to refer to population segmentation or partition. This is different from other clustering methods, such as hotspot analysis, you know, local Moran's I, Geddes ORSG. Those methods help you identify pockets of non-stationarity, and that is not the goal here. Here we're more interested in if, you know, if the center tracks cluster to form distinct groups based on their perinatal attributes. So these are the cluster inputs, mostly social demographic variables and some select maternal factors such as maternal age, obesity, smoking. These are from vital records. And they are important because of their potential association with adverse birth outcomes. But this is not an exhaustive list because we are mostly constrained to the information available from vital records and ACS. So here are the results. This is an empirical Bayesian Krieger map of very low birth weight rates. And this is what we call a contour map. So the warmer spots are areas of higher, very low birth weight rates. They are mostly in inner city areas, such as in North Las Vegas and some parts of Las Vegas. And those areas do have a higher percentage of African American populations. And the blue contours coincide with the higher income neighborhoods where you tend to have more whites and non-whites. So this map is confirming what we are expecting. And this is the K-means clustering results of our census tracts. And the green and red groups, or group 2 and 1, cover most of the disadvantaged neighborhoods. So group 2, the green group, has the highest very low birth weight rate at about 1.9%. This isn't matching what we just saw from the contour map. And these areas tend to have a higher share of African Americans, higher maternal obesity, smoking rates, and they tend to fare worse on social economic indicators. And the color choice is not exactly intuitive. The red group or group 1 also tend to fare worse on social economics, but the rate of very low birth weight there is not as high. And group 4 or the orange group tend to have slightly higher socioeconomic status. And group 3, the blue group, is the highest socioeconomic status neighborhood. They tend to have lower rate of very low birth weight rate at about 1.1%. So the map tend to match well with the contour map we just saw. So with K-means clustering, you can tell the algorithm how many groups you want to see. And I decided on 4 because I tend to struggle with 5 shades on a map. And you can also evaluate the relative importance of your input variable in the partition by their group-wise R-square values. So R-square basically tells you how effective this variable is in distinguishing your spatial features on their attributes. And the highest R-square is education, as you can see. So education has the highest between group variation and the smallest within group difference after the grouping. That is what the R-square is telling you. And also, as expected, minority makeup, poverty, income, prenatal care, language barrier, teen motherhood are among the most important in differentiating our spatial peer groups. So how do we communicate the results to our stakeholders? Well, we can show how these peer groups differentiate on these covariates. As you can see, the blue and the orange census tracts tend to hover above global median on maternal age, income, C-section. And I think C-section and maternal age and income are probably all correlated because, you know, income tend to be a enabling factor for health service use, including reproductive technology use. And the green and red census tracts, you know, tend to fare worse on socioeconomic indicators, including maternal risk factors, very low birth rate, and low food access, and other study covariates. So again, group 1 and 2 stood out as neighborhoods most in need of high-risk support programs. So it's all about converting data to action, and we were able to share those results, the mapped peer groups, with our stakeholders, both within and outside the organizations, and use them to inform our Healthy Start programs, nutrition incentive programs, you know, prenatal health and lifestyle counseling programs. And our stakeholders were really excited, and actually, you know, responded very well to the geo-visualization, and they were really excited to see that they need to focus efforts where you have unmet needs or unique needs. Sorry. In conclusion, we use geospatial analysis to identify and assess the patterns of very low birth weight in our communities, and we were able to build coalitions around those findings and use them to inform partner engagement and to help focus efforts where they're needed most. Okay. I don't know if we should leave it to the end.
Excellent study and presentation. So I have my first question about your creaking. Mm-hmm. So is there a specific reason why you chose empirical base in creaking over ordinary creaking, or is it that it's automatic that you used EBK?
Right. Yeah, the main strength of EBK is that it automates the manual process of variogram fitting, because with ordinary, or I shouldn't say ordinary, because ordinary is a special term for creaking. With classic creaking, you have to manually choose a mathematical function for semivariogram. You have a variety of choices, and you have to evaluate the performance of each semivariogram model based on cross-validated error statistics. Yes. It's a labor-intensive process. With empirical Bayesian creaking, the whole process is automated, and it also takes into account the uncertainty of your semivariogram, so that results are more accurate than your classical creaking techniques. And basically, I choose it because it saves me labor, mostly, but also because of the more accurate prediction as well. And it's also amenable to mapping. So it's the only disadvantage, I would say, is that it's very resource intensive. It can slow down your process.
And yeah. Did you try to validate your creaking model? I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Sometimes the way you validate is to try different parameters of your creaking model to see, you know, how many neighbors they include, you know.
Yeah,
and what the lag distance, you know.
Yeah, the model which gives right. you the highest R-squared value.
And yeah, you can use that. You can use, you know, leave one out error statistics like R, root mean square error or mean error, you know, choose on those, yeah, metrics.